fluffy bread, fresh tortillas, classic burger buns, and so many carbs. Carb fear is real, but Hero Bread makes healthier versions of the carb-heavy favorites we love most. We're talking fewer calories, 0 to 2 grams net carbs, 0 grams of sugar, and seriously, great taste. Made from a new recipe using heart-healthy olive oil and resistant wheat starch that acts as a prebiotic fiber to promote gut health, Hero Bread products have more of the dietary fiber and protein you want without the net carbs and sugar you don't. There's something for every craving. Sliced bread loaves, buns, and tortillas, plus monthly small batch drops of indulgent favorites with no compromise. Like the 2 gram net carb Hero croissant or the 1 gram net carb Hero cheddar biscuit. Don't skip out on your favorites. Just use Hero Bread. Get 10% off your order at hero.co with code HEROPOD at checkout. That's HEROPOD at HERO.CO.
We made this.
Welcome to Podcast 616, a podcast all about the Marvel Cinematic Universe on the We Made This podcast network. I'm your host, Mark Adams, and today we'll be looking at episode 3 of the Disney Plus series Loki, entitled Lamentis. With me at this time is Ollie Spring. Hello, Ollie.
Hey, buddy.
So, this is your We Made This debut. Introduce yourself. Tell the We Made This podcast listeners who you are.
My name is Ollie Spring. Some may know me as the Mastermind, pro wrestling commentator in my spare time for my sins. Recently debuted on Progress, which I still think is absolutely bonkers, but I'm having an absolute whale of a time down there.
I mean, it's only the biggest fucking wrestling company in Britain. Just Progress.
I think you put it the absolute best when I was chatting to people. I think you said it was the most the most lucrative freelance commentary gig you can get in the country. I think you put it,
because it is.
Yeah. You know, I like the way you put that. I like the way you put it, for sure. So commentating in my spare time. Complete Marvel addict. We've done one podcast before, but I don't think that was for... I lose track of what goes where, but we've had one podcast before where we got to talk about comics, and I think that was an absolute riot for me. And I'm kind of looking forward to kind of catching up since we had that previous chat, actually.
Yeah, well, I remember bringing you on to Pull or Pass, which is the podcast I used to do about comics, to talk to you as like almost an anomaly, as someone who loved the MCU, but had never read a Marvel comic. And I know that you have read some comics now, because I know you got Marvel Unlimited.
I have. Oh, yeah. So I took that conversation that we had on the previous pod. I kind of ran with it. Yeah, I got the Marvel Unlimited subscription, but like in many ways, I was almost like, I felt like I was drowning in an ocean of possibilities of like, where do I start? I could go left, right, up, down. There was a million different directions I could go. And it's a really good app. Don't get me wrong. It's really good of kind of pointing you in the direction of, oh, if you're new to comics, why don't you read this? Why don't you read that? But I started off with the Civil War run.
Right.
And I found very quickly in that there was that, and I tried to get into... I just dived straight into Secret Wars, because everyone said Secret Wars was amazing. The problem I found was that jumping into in the middle of that, I had no idea who was who, what was what, why people were doing anything. I think Reed Richards was an evil mastermind at this point, and I'm just like, whoa, when did this happen? And I kind of got very, very overwhelmed very quickly. So what I did, because I'm a little bit OCD and I'm a little bit of a completionist, I went right back to the start. I'm talking like I started reading the first few pages of the very oldest one that was on there from like the 30s.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
I soon realized that was a terrible idea. But at the same time, it was also quite educational. It was very interesting reading about how kind of characters, well, how the way that superheroes were interpreted, you know, in almost, you know, best part of 100 years ago. That was very interesting for sure. But I actually started properly with Uncanny X-Men number one.
Okay.
And I've literally read the first 100 of the X-Men kind of run, because I just wanted to kind of learn everything from the start, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
because as I say, jumping into something like Secret Wars halfway through, when everyone's got these fleshed out characters and I have no idea how we got there, it's almost like turning on the WWE Network for the first time and watching Progress Wrestling chapter 112 and having no idea who this commentator guy is and why all of a sudden this dude is like this when the last time you saw him he was like that. It can be very disorientating. So I started from the start. I've read well over 100 of the X-Men run and thoroughly enjoying it. Even though it is a little bit dated, the way they treat Jean Grey is it wouldn't fly in 2021. I get the feeling, but it's interesting to go back to the start and see where people came from.
Have you read any Thor stuff?
Oh yes, I have. So at the request of our very good friend Warren Banks, I read the entire run of the, is it the Godkiller?
Okay.
I want to say there's about a 3 or 4 kind of mini arc story where Gore was introduced. And there was the God Bomb and all this sort of stuff. Read that entire run because essentially, I think after a few kind of pages, I was like, okay, I know who everybody is. No one's drastically different than what they should be. And yeah, really enjoyed that as well. Really, and now actually, when we get Thor, Love, and Thunder, I will actually have a clue on who Christian Bale's character is going to be. And I'm going to be able to be one of those people that go, oh, it's not like that in the comics. So for the first time in my entire life, in 10 plus years of marking out at the cinema over films, I'm going to be able to be one of the people that compares it to the comics and says, oh, well, in this, in the back of my mind, I've got a bit of an idea of how it could develop, if that makes sense. But I'm presuming that, I mean, that's maybe another conversation for another day. We can maybe pick up on that later on.
So we are going to be covering Love and Thunder on the podcast at some point. Maybe put your name forward for it.
I absolutely will. Absolutely. I mean, to be fair, anything with the word Marvel in it, just automatically presume I want to pick up a microphone and talk for hours and hours and hours about it.
I mean, you're in the right place because yeah. I'm hardly known for my brevity within our network. Yeah, we do have a rotating hosts situation. So I missed out on the last episode. So before we look at Lamentis, I want to get your opinion on, very briefly, if possible, and I know this is you and me, but very briefly, how do you feel it's going so far, episode 1 and 2? Have you enjoyed the series up to the point?
Absolutely, absolutely. I do feel that with every of the Disney Plus Marvel kind of TV series type stuff, the first two episodes, at least, they're very much just setting up the scene. This is very much a TV like kind of writing and setting up everything, storytelling, I guess, if you will. So I think it's safe to not, what's the word, like, not get your hopes up for more, but you have to let them kind of slowly tell the story they're telling. Like with WandaVision, you couldn't just, they couldn't tell that the story they told and you know, give away too much in the first two episodes. It's all about slowly building up this little mini universe, if you will. And I think that's what they're doing perfectly right now. They did it great with Falcon and Winter Soldier. They did it brilliantly with WandaVision. I think that's exactly what they're doing with Loki. The kind of the slow burn character development of essentially how do we get from the Loki in Avengers, who I mean, let's face it, he was mildly entertaining, but, you know, no one cared that much about him. The people started caring more about him the more his character developed over the films.
Yeah.
So I think the challenge they've been faced with is how to get that Loki onto our screens without, you know, what, like 5-6 years of character development in various movies. And I think they've found a way to do it brilliantly with they've got those kind of, I guess like this is your lifestyle.
Yeah.
Like here's everything that's going to happen to you in the next 5 years as far as character development. Just get there now, because I do feel that we have gone very quickly to the 2019 Loki, as opposed to the one we had. Yeah, was it 2014 the first Avengers film?
Roughly. I'm not so hot on dates, I'm afraid. Yeah. I've never been any good at that kind of thing. I just like what I like when I like it, you know?
Exactly. So yeah, so I think they've done a very good job of kind of circumnavigating the character arc to at least make him recognizable to us, because obviously in kayfabe he wouldn't be he shouldn't be the same person that we think he is now, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Time travel is tricky.
I mean, I know the show has been very well received. It's got great, I think it's got something like 95% on Rotten Tomatoes so far, which is insane. But
pretty good.
The criticisms that, I mean, and I've thrown these as well, is that it struggles for original ideas and concepts. It takes very heavily from Doctor Who, from Kafka, from Douglas Adams, from countless other timey-wimey type stuff. Do you feel like that criticism's fair?
See, this is the thing. I think the problem that...
Fluffy bread, fresh tortillas, classic burger buns, and so many carbs. Carb fear is real. But Hero Bread makes healthier versions of the carb-heavy favorites we love most. We're talking fewer calories, 0 to 2 grams net carbs, 0 grams of sugar, and seriously, great taste. Made from a new recipe using heart-healthy olive oil and resistant wheat starch that acts as a prebiotic fiber to promote gut health, Hero Bread products have more of the dietary fiber and protein you want without the net carbs and sugar you don't. There's something for every craving. Sliced bread loaves, buns, and tortillas, plus monthly small batch drops of indulgent favorites with no compromise. Like the 2 gram net carb Hero croissant or the 1 gram net carb Hero cheddar biscuit. Don't skip out on your favorites. Just use Hero Bread. Get 10% off your order at hero.co with code HEROPOD at checkout. That's HEROPOD at HERO.CO.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I'm noticing a lot of people that they expect certain things. And this is kind of going back to earlier points as well, is when you expect too much, it's never going to meet those expectations, and you're going to kind of complain about something. Whereas I think I go in, and I know this is going to sound stupid because it's me and it's Marvel, I try and go in with lower expectations, as in let it lead me down the path, rather than going, oh my God, this is going to be amazing. We've got time travel. That means we might get this. We might get that. We're going to get this person, or, you know, we're going to get a cameo from Thor, or someone's going to pop up. I don't let myself get too carried away. I just let it be its own thing.
Right.
And I can't help but feel the people that are going to, you know, kind of not necessarily gun for it specifically, but be overly harsh, have their own preconceptions of what it should be or what it's going to be.
That's a very valid point. I agree.
Yeah, good. So one of the things I think I might have almost, I didn't really ruin it, but like with WandaVision, I was very heavy into, as soon as the episodes were out, looking at the breakdown videos on YouTube of all the experts going through it frame by frame and all this sort of stuff. I'm a massive, massive fan of new rock stars. Eric Voss is the guy I would love to have a cup of tea with. So far, I haven't gone to a single breakdown, Easter egg, whatever video, because I think with WandaVision, everyone was talking about Mephisto turning up, and everyone was absolutely hell-bent on the fact that this is definitely happening. This is 1,000% locked in. And when he didn't show up, everyone was like, oh, this sucks, blah, blah, blah. I think that because it was so good still, though, as an ending, and the way the finale was, people weren't too mad. But I think it ran the risk of people kind of shitting on it because everyone thought they were going to get Mephisto and they didn't get Mephisto. So therefore, it must be awful.
I wonder where the Mephisto shit came from, because we talked about that on this podcast.
To be fair, there was a lot of very some subtle, some not so subtle nods towards the fact that he could be around. But then at the same time, that was from a lot of the people that were going from the source material, so they know that Agatha Harkness is linked with Mephisto, and Mephisto is blah 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 blah. True. And like there's this whole backlore that people who read the comics were expecting, and. I think at this point in the MCU, we need to understand and recognize that just because it happened in the comics doesn't mean it's going to happen in the film. Like, and there is plenty of room for maneuver to change characters and kind of mold the comic universe into something new for that works on you know, the cinema screen.
I'd go as far as saying I'd be disappointed if they made it too similar to the comics, because I've read
this
story.
Is it, right? Yeah, you already know what's going to happen, so it's almost like there's nothing for you to get excited about or surprised about when something that you know is going to happen is going to happen. So with Loki, I've tried to avoid as many kind of like breakdown videos, because a lot of them also act as spoilers, and I kind of don't want things to be spoiled. Like if this entire arc has been told in one version in the comics, then I don't want to know at the moment, in all honesty. I want this to be as fresh and as new as can be. And I think so far it's working brilliantly for me. This, in a way, I'm so glad out of the three episodes, and I'm probably just saying it because it's the one I've literally just finished watching. I'm so glad this is the one that I get to talk to you about, because I think this has got so much substance to it. The first two episodes definitely just setting up the TVA and who they are and what they are, and getting Loki, you know, down his character arc to get to the point where he's the lovable version of his character that we all, you know, love and want to see do well. Whereas I think if the dickhead from 2014 was the guy in this, he wasn't that entertaining. He wasn't that engaging as a character. He was kind of just there as the bad guy. And you know, by that point, you knew they were going to beat him. So I don't think that the original version of Loki that we saw was anywhere near as watchable as the version that we've ended up with.
Yeah.
So I think definitely the first two episodes, you think about it, like WandaVision, the first two episodes, that was both were they both black and white? I get the feeling they were.
Yeah, but that was obviously because of the sitcom time it was set in, yes. And then it was a big deal when it went into color. I bloody loved that.
And exactly, and this is the thing. So two episodes of WandaVision were literally just to set up the fact that, okay, so you've got yourself a kind of sitcom TV universe where things can change. It set the scene, but also kind of sowed enough seeds for you to want to see what came next. With Falcon and the Winter Soldier, the first, if I remember rightly, the first episode was pretty much just setting up the fact that Bucky's trying to make amends and Sam's got a family. That was literally the first episode.
And Sam rejected the shield, but yeah.
Yeah, was... oh yeah, of course, yeah. It felt like that, and then the second episode was where they started sprinkling in the excitement of, oh, this is now where we're going to be taking this story. And that's the thing, and the same with Loki. You know, obviously we had finding out how we got to the TVA and then everything happening at the TVA. I think that was, and again, at the end of episode two, sprinkling in that little bit of seasoning of this is where we're going to go with it. This is the roller coaster ride you're about to go on. There's a good analogy. There's a great analogy. First two episodes, you're on a roller coaster, you're going up the ramp. And then by the end of the second episode, you're kind of about tipping over the top. You've got that nice view for a couple of seconds before you're thrust on this ride. And I think we're on the precipice of a big dipper right now.
Brilliant. I think that's a perfect way for us to get going and talk about episode three, Lamentis.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's a 42-minute episode, which means it's about 10 minutes shorter than the previous two episodes. And I think I like this. I like the fact that if they've only got 42 minutes of story, they have the freedom to not pad it and not mess with it. And also it means, obviously, for longer episodes as well. They don't have to have it to a specific TV time, which
I definitely
think it benefits from.
I agree. I think that the first time I was kind of the episode runtime was really a thing was with Mandalorian.
Yes.
Because the episodes, that was kind of the first time I'd noticed people saying, oh, did you notice this episode is this long and this one's this long? It kind of feels like they're as long as they need to be rather than, oh, we need to pad this out for TV because we've got to fit this much in, or we have to cut stuff out because we've only got this much time. It is very freeing for these episodes to be as long as they need to be.
Yeah, exactly that.
And the other thing I think I'll just kind of shoehorn this in. I love the fact that these are being released weekly. I've always loved the fact that these shows have been released weekly because it gives you... You imagine if we could just binge this in a whole weekend, like one day, just get it all done. And what have you got to look forward to? I said with WandaVision, it almost saved my sanity throughout that block of lockdown because it meant every week you had something to look forward to. Going then into Falcon and then now into this, it's obviously, I guess now with things, life getting kind of slightly easier, it's not needed as much, but I love the fact that we have stuff to look forward to like this.
For me, I moved away from watching stuff on a weekly basis when I basically stopped using live telly I got used to Netflix and Amazon having everything I wanted, and I could watch as many episodes as I liked. And even prior to that, something like buying 24 on DVD, bloody hell, you couldn't watch just one episode of 24. So it feels almost retro to me going back to...
Yeah, exactly that.
Maybe not my childhood, but yeah, my childhood and my early adulthood. The way of watching these programs has been actually quite thrilling, and it gives you the opportunity to have the playground talk where you see that episode of this week? Which
I can't believe this happened, or that person did that.
Yeah.
And in many ways, I think potentially the people that are overly criticizing a lot of these shows are the people that haven't grown up with that. So they don't appreciate the slow burn storytelling. It's I hate to say it, but the MTV generation where they want everything and they want it now. But I think potentially for people like you and me that will remember, you know, sitting down on a Friday night to watch the next episode of something, I think it is a lost art. And I think they're telling it in the old fashioned way of, you know, making you want more and not giving you everything in every episode and letting it build. And I think that's such an important thing, that potentially a learning opportunity for the younger generation to find out what it's like not being able to just binge an entire series the minute it's released. I think it's powerful for sure.
So I'm going to do a cheeky little synopsis, just run through quickly what happened, just absolutely, so we know what happened, and then we'll just talk about what we want, I think.
So
Loki has followed the variant, who we discover is called Sylvie rather than Loki, and they end up confronted by Renslayer at the TVA, and they escape using a tempad and end up at somewhere called Lamentis One in the future in 2077. Mm-hmm. And they are at another apocalypse where a moon is about to get crushed by a planet. And they've basically fucked up the tempad and have got no means of escape. They form a kind of uncomfortable alliance in this whole kind of like desperate situation and try and find the power to charge the tempad. And unfortunately, Loki gets drunk and breaks it. And they then, blah, 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 shenanigans fighting on a train. They end up trying to hijack.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
A root off of the Lamentis 1, which was an arc, a kind of a gigantic escape pod, I suppose. And the cliffhanger is, oh shit, that got destroyed. What do we do now? I don't think I've missed anything.
No, I think you covered pretty much everything there. And I think that this is where the fun is going to start, where we talk about the fleshy bits in the middle. Ultimately, that was a very good synopsis. And yeah, I think I'm pretty sure you covered everything, didn't you?
Cool. Well,
yeah,
we'll see as we go along. I did like how it started with, I don't know if you had listened to the lyrics of the track, but it felt like the song fitted the vibe of Loki really well. I've never heard the song before.
Same.
And it turns out it's a track called Demons by Hayley Kiyoko. So I'm going to perhaps listen to her a little more because it was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was. That was a nice little track to kick things off with. Yeah, what was because for me, there is definitely one. The overriding arc that I feel in this that kind of got me thinking, the main thing that I was thinking to myself, I really want to talk to Mark about this, is I love the way that Marvel generally tend to, they I want to say play with your emotions, but they literally have you eating out the palm of your hand at any given moment in almost any episode of any of these series or in any movie. I get the feeling they could make me laugh, cry, you know, dance for joy, shriek in excitement. I feel like my entire emotional spectrum is in the palm of their hand, because there was kind of moments where I kind of felt myself feeling really sad and like getting quite emotional for some of the stuff that Loki was saying. And then 5 minutes later, I'm laughing about a joke or a little callback that happens. And then it's tense, and it's just that literally that my emotions and my heart rate just goes up. It's all over the shop for pretty much every episode. And I think I definitely felt it most prevalently in this one.
Yeah.
For as far as, you know, how easily they can go from something being really tense with these two characters just having, like, yeah, just fighting through a corridor, for example. And then 5 seconds later, 10 seconds later, 20 minutes later, however long it was, Loki's on a train and he starts talking about his mum, and then it kind of hits home, like, and you remember, like, that, you know, who his prior relationships and stuff that, you know, you forget about when all the action's happening, and then he starts talking about his mum and you're like, oh, and it just hits you right in the feels and it gets you right in the back of your throat, that little lump. And then and then 10 minutes later he's getting drunk and he's doing a callback to Thor in the very first Thor film, smashing glasses everywhere, and I'm kind of chuckling, going, yeah, I know what that means. And it just the emotional roller coaster they take you on, it is unlike anything I've ever experienced before. It is insane. I love it.
I mean, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. It's not just this episode, it's not just Loki. It seems to be something that the MCU does so well, is the balance between the humor and intensity and the heaviness and then the lightheartedness. It's just so brilliantly done.
Absolutely. I think I'm trying to remember the first time I think that it was potentially all the way back from Guardians that I started noticing just how able they were doing all of the spectrum of emotions really well. And then there was one of my favorite quotes, and I'll always say this, is from you, is talking about how superhero isn't a genre. It's the equivalent of like a wrestling belt in a storyline. It's a prop. It's not necessarily a genre in itself. You know, you've got.
I did say that, didn't I?
Yeah, it is the perfect quote for me. It rings so true because, you know, there's you're able to do so much within this genre. You think of the stuff that the TV shows have addressed so far, where it comes to. You know, like, I think grieving and loss in WandaVision, and then race and equality inequality in Falcon and the Winter Soldier. And now I guess we're dealing with identity. I think, again, I'm pretty sure I've just stolen your entire message to me as well from a previous chat. The fact that superhero Marvel is there, but it's not all about the powers and the oh, I can lift a building up with my pinky finger, and oh, I can fire beams of light out my fists. It's about the people.
Absolutely. And you actually think about this one single episode, it is science fiction, time traveling. It's a crime thriller because he's investigating what the actual truth is behind all of this TVA stuff. It's an attempted heist, and it's a buddy movie in 40 minutes.
Yeah.
And this is why it really does get on my nerves when people say superhero films. No, superhero is a setting. It's like set in Britain, or it's set in the Wild West. It's a setting. It's not a genre.
Yeah.
And I also think that you've hit something else on the head there about identity.
I definitely stole that from you. This is me using your words now.
Well, you know, they were obviously good words.
Absolutely.
So I think probably the most significant thing to me, this show has an openly LGBT character. He is, as of this episode, confirmed as being bisexual. And not only was he confirmed about being bisexual, did you notice in the scene when they were talking about princesses and princes? Mm-hmm. That the lighting in the background was the colours of the bi flag.
I did not.
Well, that's because you're not bendy like me. And I just jumped for joy, man. I was over the fucking moon that it was that clever and that subtle. And something that, for example, as a straight man, you probably wouldn't spot. But for me, it was everything.
Yeah. And that's the thing. And the fact that it's, I guess for me, it didn't, I don't want to say, like, maybe shift the focus away from it, as in, like, all of a sudden, okay, I'm watching somebody else's story now. It didn't. Obviously, for you, you were like, yes, this is something that I can, what's the word I'm looking for? Relate to? Is that the right way of putting it?
Yeah.
So, yeah. But for me, it wasn't like, because there's definitely been certain films and maybe TV series or moments in TV series that I knew weren't for me as a who I am as a person in society. It was a statement, and it was for other people. Let's put it that way. Does that make sense without making me sound like I'm not trying to sound like a dick, but like I recognize that certain speeches or scenes it was not for my benefit.
I think what you're getting at is it doesn't matter to you. But it's amazing that it matters to other people with that level of inclusion, right?
Exactly. And I think there's been shows over the years and various films over the years that if it doesn't speak to you, you can't enjoy it. Or maybe it doesn't, something that might carry a lot of weight, whether it be historical, emotional, political, any sort of weight. If it doesn't carry any of that for you, then it's just not enjoyable whatsoever. With the Marvel films and the series, it doesn't lessen the enjoyment. And I guess the same could be said for hardcore nerds that recognize the tiniest of callbacks versus, you know, casual fans that just want to watch the films once and they're done. They've found this balance of being able to speak to so many different groups of people without, without alienating other people. Or that group entirely, and that's the thing. So whilst I would have never noticed the lighting color in the background, it didn't take anything away from me, but it added for you.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a skill. That is a skill.
Mm.
That is not something that can be done easy.
And again, I think Marvel are very serious about inclusion. Mm. Had you told me 10 years ago they were going to do a Shang-Chi Hong Kong style film, I'd have laughed at you. Yeah. And I love Hong Kong cinema. I can't wait to see what they do with Shang-Chi.
And again, it's a superhero film, but it's a setting again for, you know, a kung fu movie. That again, I've never really necessarily been into kung fu movies and that sort of stuff. But I get the feeling I'm still going to go and watch it two or three times at the cinema and enjoy every second of it. I cannot wait. But yeah, I that scene in the bath and that for me in this episode was so powerful, because it was almost like you could literally see the moment that he let his guard down, she asked him one question. He answered it honestly. And I think for Loki, honest answers is something you don't really get very often. But I feel like when you get it, you really see it in him. Because he was, and I loved the way that, I think the previous episode we was talking about, the good thing about being a trickster is that everyone knows you're a trickster, so they're expecting you to trick them. So then you can kind of play on that. But they don't know that you know that they know that he's a trickster, so he can kind of double and triple bluff you with his tricking. And that kind of ethos of his where, you know, he almost plays up to it because he knows that's what's expected of him. With a lot of his answers to questions, he's always maybe giving you a half truth, probably giving you a lie. But so there are very rare moments I feel that you can kind of, when he says something, you just know this is who he really is. This is stripping away all of the insecurities and the worries of having to be this certain person. And he started talking about his mum, and you could just see in his face straight away, you're like, this is the real Loki right now. He's not trying to impress or be guarded or watch his back for someone trying to, you know, stab him in the back. He's just being open and honest and raw. And as I say, that was when I started feeling it right there. And he started talking about his mum, and especially because obviously in the previous episodes, you've been reminded that, you know, he watched her die essentially. And, you know, that's him kind of reminiscing about her. And yeah, it was just such a nice moment. And I say, it's crazy to think that, you know, 5 minutes before that, they were at each other's throats with swords and daggers, you know, potentially killing each other. And
so I want to go back to the fight scene, actually.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was really fucking cool. And she looked so badass and very much his equal, which I think is great.
Yeah.
And there's been people who have been waiting a long time. I know Carpenter, one of my co-hosts, she said, I want to know what Loki's powers are. And, well, we've seen both Loki and Sylvie's powers here and incorporated into the martial arts. And it was just so fucking cool.
It was. And one thing, did you notice when she was in the TVA, she tried to enchant someone and it failed.
So
she was forced to resort to doing the, kind of getting her hands dirty and kind of kicking some ass, because she tried to do the little green magic, and obviously the rule in the TVA is magic doesn't work. And then she was like, oh shit, I guess I have to kick some ass now. That was really fun.
Yeah. And I think also Loki versus Loki was only very, very brief and left you wanting more.
True.
Which isn't what they normally do. You normally get like a big, fat, full fight, and it's sometimes even over-egged. And I was like, is that it? And it was. Yeah. So I thought that was nice too.
So my question for you actually, is she a Loki? Because...
Right.
I don't know how convinced I am that she is a Loki. And they're being very... They're kind of nudging you in the direction that this is she is a variant, but she calls herself, she doesn't call herself like but then I guess I've never had to deal with identity issues or kind of re-identifying with someone that I'm not meant to be, as it were. But I'm still not convinced that she is a variant of Loki. Let's put it that way.
So here's the thing. We were talking about comic book knowledge.
Yes, and I know there is a Lady Loki in the comics.
There is, but there is also a character called the Enchantress.
Yes.
The second Enchantress, Amora was the first Enchantress. The second Enchantress was given her powers by Loki, and her first name was Sylvie.
Yeah.
So is it that this is the second Enchantress? We're going to discover that a Loki has created her. She may think she's a Loki. She may know she's not a Loki, and she's leading Loki to believe that she is. Mm-hmm. Or have the two characters been merged into one for the MCU?
And this is it. There's all possible options. And again, I don't like to kind of make bold claims and say this is definitely going to happen. This is actually. I did a lot of that with WandaVision. I realized trying to predict where it's going to go actually kind of takes your enjoyment out of it, because then if it doesn't go the way you said it was going to go, you kind of get a bit downhearted and upset about it. So I'm not going to try to predict what's going to happen. But in this moment, I'm still not fully convinced that she is a variant of Loki. I'm excited to find out more about her. And I think, and again, in a great way, we got all the way through this episode and we still don't really know anything about her.
No.
Other than the name that she is you know, asked to go by. And the fact that, because that's the thing, like she could just be kind of completely playing tricks. Like as far as, in a way, I'm a big fan of studying things, like studying communication in the way that you can easily manipulate people with the words that you choose and the way that you deliver those words. So talking about the whole adoption thing, in theory, Loki believes that, because Loki believes that she is a version of him, and therefore Loki's belief is that she must also have been adopted. I'm still not, she didn't actually say she had. She just said, I think she said like, oh, they didn't tell you, as in like, oh, they told me. But like, she didn't say that. I think I'd have to go and rewatch it to find the exact way that she put it. But again, she didn't admit to anything, but he firmly believed it.
Firm, you're absolutely right. Good. You know, I mean, grief.
So a lot, and this is why I think Loki is one of my, I won't say favorite characters, but he's definitely the one I'm intrigued the most by, because, like, as I say, it's not what he says, not often a lot of what he says, but the way he says it, and the way that you can twist words, and the way that you can use semantics to manipulate people to believe things. And in a way, that's why I love his relationship with Mobius as well, because in the tent, in the second episode, I think it was, and he kind of said, I think he stopped everyone and said, if you leave now, you're all dead. And he gave this big monologue speech that made it sound like he was saying something. And then actually, in reality, he was actually saying nothing. He was just stalling them. But and Mobius kind of, he took a breath. He said, he kind of actually soaked up everything he just said and was like, actually, no, come on. He was just stringing us along there. Like, it's obvious now, but like in the moment when someone that is quite manipulative starts talking to you, it's so easy to get lost up in what they're saying. And then you start building this presumption of knowing what they're talking about or applying it to something that shouldn't be applied to. And all of a sudden, like, you know, you're into this big monologue and you've completely forgot about what was going on and they've done whatever they needed to do. I love that kind of the language and communication of manipulating in that respect, not necessarily manipulating in a nasty way, but the way that you can make someone believe something without actually saying it's true. And then you've completely covered your own back and said, well, I never said that. And all of a sudden you think back and go, shit, they didn't.
So the manipulation thing was something else I'd made a note of.
Yeah.
And if you look at the powers that both Loki and Sylvie use, Sylvie's violates people. She goes into their brains and fucks with their memories. She goes for people's minds. Loki didn't do that. And I think that's kind of suggesting that we've got the goody Loki. It's almost,
that's,
I don't know,
a good,
is
point.
It,
that's a very good point. Yeah, yeah.
But I'm not sure I like it. Is it twee to make, in inverted commas, our Loki the goody? Does he need to be a goodie? I think he's interesting enough without a babyface turn if we're going to talk like wrestlers.
True, true. But then at the same time, I also didn't think of it like that. So this is, I get, and again, this is the thing. There's probably ways to twist it either way. But then again, that's working on the presumption that they're both a Loki and therefore one is good and bad. I don't think either of them are inherently good or bad. I think they're, again, let's go wrestling lingo. Let's call them tweeners. They're good people that do bad things and bad people that do good things. In fact, isn't that a quote from one of the first few episodes when he says that no one is inherently good, or, you know, sometimes good people do bad things and bad people do good things. I could have swore that was a quote from one of the first episode. But yeah,
I think you're right.
Yeah, I haven't rewatched any of them, so it's been, you know, it's been 2 weeks since I watched the first one, so my memory is a bit hazy right now. But
what I did with the first two, with WandaVision and Falcon and the Winter Soldier, I watched them all weekly, and then the day before the final episode was released, I binge watched it again.
I like that. I like that that way of doing things. I think I tried to do that, and something happened, or I just got distracted, or I realized I'd started it too late, and I only got a few episodes in, and was like, I'm just going to get excited about tomorrow's episode. I do like that way of doing things for sure. Because at least that way, yeah. I mean, especially as to say, if you're going to be on a podcast about something, you should probably do your research and swat up on this sort of stuff. That's exactly what I would do. But yeah, I like the fact that they are kind of shades of grey, because I don't believe she's bad in any way. I believe she's doing what she feels like she has to do to accomplish whatever the goal is she's trying to achieve. But you could tell that I don't think she really wanted to kill. I think if she wanted to kill Loki, he'd be dead. And I think if he wanted to kill her, she'd be dead.
Loki the goody? She did refer to the TVA as omniscient fascists, and that sent a shiver up my spine.
And this is the thing, I can't wait to explore more. I want to know so much about her. I want to ask her a million questions.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
In my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And this is the thing, and Loki knows that. I think Loki knows that if he were to ask her questions, he'd get nothing back. And it was that kind of give and take of information. Completely random side note, I've been watching, in lockdown, I've discovered board games quite a lot, and I've discovered a YouTube channel called No Rolls Barred. But there's a hidden role game that they play a lot of called Blood on the Clock Tower, and trying to summarize it in a sentence is going to be near impossible. Everyone has a secret role. Some people are good, some people are bad. You don't want to give away too much about yourself, because, you know, bad people kill people, and then in another phase of the game, everyone votes off somebody to get killed through democracy as well. So it's essentially a game of you have information, and it's who do you trust with the information that you have of this is who I am, this is my role. I might get killed now that somebody knows this information about me in this game. And it's kind of that. I'm seeing a lot of that. Loki doesn't want to give too much information away, but has to give away enough information so he can get the information he needs. It's this kind of delicate balance of not wanting to give away too much of yourself, but recognizing you have to give something up to get something back.
So, right. Under the assumption that Sylvie is Loki.
Yeah.
If I met me, I suspect I would do one of two things.
Okay.
I would have sex with me, or I would massively bicker with me. And this is what we see with these two, is that they bicker. I wonder if they're going to have sex.
I was feeling the tension. I was feeling the sexual tension, definitely, when they were sat across the table from each other. I was feeling that. I was like, is this going to happen? Are they going to? And then you start asking questions of, is that right to do?
As far as I'm concerned, it's like having a wank.
True. It is, sex with yourself. But then again, and that's when I started asking myself, but is she really another a variant of Loki, blah, blah. I started off down that entire rabbit hole. I think for me, if I was in that situation, the most interesting thing to me is, yes, they're a variant of each other, but they're not exactly the same. So she's obviously had different parts of her story, parts of her story are completely different to his. So to me, if that was me talking to a variant of myself, I would be super curious to find out all the details of how we differ. And it's not just, okay, so, I'm a guy, you're a girl. It's more, they were talking about, like, did you know you were adopted? we don't even know if she grew up, if in her reality she grew up on Asgard.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't know. She could also be a part frost giant. She might not be. Like, there's, and then I guess this is where it gets really interesting. Of as far as identity again, like, what makes a Loki Loki? Is it, you know, is in every reality does Loki have to be a, you know, an adoptive son of a frost giant that grew up as a crown prince and did this, did that, or, you know, like what defines you as that, as you being you? And I guess we could be going down the ship of Theseus route right now and saying, oh, if yeah, you take away this part of your story and that part of your story and replace it with a different part, at what point are you the same ship? And I guess this is where, again, if you look at it from one angle, it's just a really cool timey-wimey story about, you know, this guy that we've seen in a few films that we find entertaining doing some stuff. Or you can flip the coin and go, oh, so identity, what makes a Loki Loki? And then you start down this whole rabbit hole, and all of a sudden you are psychoanalyzing yourself and everything you've ever done and said and known. And yeah, it's just brilliant storytelling, isn't it?
Absolutely right. So I want to talk about hedonism.
Okay.
The fact that he acknowledges completely that he is a hedonist, and yeah, so does she. You have to be a certain level of confidence to tell someone that you are comfortable being a hedonist.
True. And again, the way she showed things was that she claimed that, oh, I'm way more hedonistic than you. But like, we see nothing to reflect that, and even that. But then at the same time, she was very clever in saying, ah, but in the face of the mission, you know, I know to keep it in check. And again, like, she says this sort of thing, but we haven't seen that from her. And again, you know, we're kind of presuming that she's basically, you know, claiming to be cut from the same cloth. But yeah, you know, when she was offered drinks and stuff, even with the mission, Loki's on a mission as well. He is balls deep in his mission, but he's having fun. She wasn't.
Yeah.
And again, this is why I question, is she really a variant of Loki, or is she someone completely different? But and again, then you have to ask yourself, well, does hedonism define a Loki or Loki? You know, is that what defines him, or is that just how it defines that variant of him?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's clearly not his powers either, because we talked about it earlier that Loki and Sylvie have different powers or use different powers. We don't know that Loki can't use the kind of mind rapey shit that she uses and hasn't chosen not to.
Yeah.
So that isn't as clear as I thought it was when I started that sentence. Shit.
Again, this is why it's so great, because you go down one path and all of a sudden you've taken a hard left and you're going down a completely other path, and then, you know, before you know it, you've completely forgot where you started and where you were going in the first place, but you're still on the path going somewhere interesting.
To coin a phrase, wibbly wobbly timey wimey.
There you go. And actually, talking about the way that you put it with her powers, I kind of wonder how much of a, or how much, how, what the likelihood of her and Scarlet Witch crossing paths? Because you think about Age of Ultron, that's essentially, it's a very similar thing to what Wanda was doing with the Avengers when she was messing with their minds, except her little puff of smoke was red instead of green.
True.
And I do like the various contrasts of, like, of things like that, of kind of similar but different. So yeah, I'm kind of curious as to if that's going to go somewhere, because, you know, we've seen those powers before, and is she going to develop, like, bigger powers, stronger powers? You talking about the fact that Loki was the one that gave her powers, is there going to be some sort of thing of maybe she believes Loki is her dad or something like that, and she's tried to set this whole story up so that she can spend time getting to know who she believes is her dad, maybe? Or, like,
potentially.
This is like, and again, I know I'm so far down the rabbit hole I can't see sunlight anymore, but
you have definitely gone down a rabbit hole.
All of these, and I love the fact that all of these things could very well happen, but at the same time, they don't need to happen for my interest to be more than piqued.
Agree. So, out of the two definitions of love, do you feel that think that love is hate or love is an imaginary dagger?
I mean, the imaginary dagger idea was definitely more fleshed out. And there was a part of me that was really enjoying where it was going. And I was like, you know what? He's onto this. And then all of us, nah, yeah, he hasn't got a clue.
No.
I mean, that love is a, you know, that's, I'm pretty sure that was something that was on one of my grand's tea towels. There's all kind of like 60s cartoon characters talking
grief.
About. That's where my mind went.
That.
Yeah, that's right. Where my mind went with it of love is and, you know, a hot cup of tea.
Showing your age.
I know. You don't, yeah. So it was my birthday last week. Yeah, so it's a question that, you know, I think in many ways, it's many things to many different people, many different things to many different people. I'm not entirely sure. In fact, no. Loki definitely has experienced it, but I think Loki's only really experienced it from his mum.
Right.
And again, because maybe from Thor as well, in a weird kind of misguided way. But I think Loki's main source of main experience of love that we've seen, at least on the you know, on the cinema screen, was between him and his mum. And in fact, I'm not sure if it's something that I want to believe from Mobius, but like saying how that Loki directed the Dark Elves up the flight of stairs that led them to his mum, and therefore he's responsible for her death. I don't know how much of that was manipulation from Mobius, but that, hearing that and then seeing Loki's realization that his mischief and his lust for chaos led to his mum being killed at the hands of the Dark Elves, that hit me real hard, as in, like, you know, he didn't mean to do that. But then at the same time, as I said, I still question, Is that actually what happened, or is he being manipulated into being subservient to the TVA?
So I think, very briefly, going back to the idea of love.
Yeah, also, I went way off course there.
You did. I just wanted to touch on it, because if Sylvie is Loki,
yeah,
this is two gods having a conversation.
True.
And neither of them have got a fucking clue about love.
Absolutely.
And these are gods.
Yeah.
And I think that message is quite important, that if a god doesn't know what love is, it's okay if we don't.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I like that. That's a really nice sentiment. Love is a mystery. love is mischief, love is chaos, it's a dagger, it's hate, it's
It's all of those things and none of those things.
It's exactly, it's a question that cannot be answered ever.
Imagine if it was answerable. Well, that'd suck.
Yeah. Well, I was like, oh, well, that's the answer. Love is 42. There we go.
Well, we did mention Douglas Adams at the start of the episode.
We did.
So there was the big reveal. Let's talk about that now. TVA staff are all variants, and they have lived for 100 years.
The fact that was a bombshell that they just completely plastered. It was almost like Loki discovered that thought just as we discovered it, but before you could even dwell on it, shit, there's fire raining from the sky. We need to survive this. I am so intrigued right now, because with that one line, that one moment of realization, could have just tore this entire series wide open. Everything you thought was left is now right. Everything you thought was up is now down. I'm so intrigued. I want
but
to
Ollie,
know.
We've also talked earlier.
Yeah.
We at least implied that both Loki and Sylvie are unreliable narrators.
True.
Did she lie to him?
True. But then we saw it on the screen, didn't we? We saw them in the cocktail bar. There's just so much. There's so many like questions, and I'm just chomping at the bit for the next thing. Maybe Mobius is the one that's been manipulated by the timekeepers, and actually he's been told that, you know, he can never jet ski, and he can never do this, and he can never do that. I'll be honest. I'm inclined to believe that, because firstly we physically saw Sylvie in the mind of, was it C20? Was that her?
Yeah.
And at the same time, it's completely stripping them of names, of identities. They're now just names and numbers. It makes perfect sense to me in many ways. In a little bit of a way, kind of like Captain Marvel and Carol being completely brainwashed and mind erased from everything. So, you know, she's now been given a, you know, a four-letter name of Vers, and, you know, she doesn't remember anything, and she's, as far as she's concerned, she's indoctrinated into the Kree Force. could be very similar with this indoctrination into the TVA, mind wiped, told that, oh, your existence is purely from the timekeepers, you know, and that's, and all of a sudden, you know, 99% of people believe it until, and then maybe they're going to start freeing these agents and these people that, you know, thought that, you know, they were, you know, this is all they've ever known. And actually turns out they're all variants that have just been picked up from, you know, from various times. Maybe that was the point. They were trying to recruit Loki and then wipe his mind, and they're going to have a really powerful Minuteman on their hands. Who knows? But that whole, yeah, like split second scene of realization. Yeah, that was that kind of, I was doing the whole Leonardo DiCaprio kind of shocked point at the television screen sort of thing. I have no idea what that meme is from, but I reference it quite a lot. Yeah, that kind of whole like, oh, pointing at the table, like, oh my God, and essentially that's the first time that Loki realized that he's actually been properly lied to and manipulated by the TVA.
I definitely had that moment with the bye thing, I'll be honest.
Oh, yeah.
So, again, no post-credits. I was really expecting one this week, and it didn't happen.
Yeah.
I was expecting something with Mobius, like a revelation of Mobius or something like that, something back at the TVA, and we didn't get one.
Yeah.
But in a weird way, I think that's good, because we have come to expect, even from the telly shows, post-credit scenes from Marvel, and when you don't get one, that's more unusual than getting one these days.
In all honesty, I don't expect them from the TV shows. And I'm trying to think. I think in WandaVision, what, there was maybe two episodes that had a post-credit scene?
And I want to say maybe three.
Was it the last two or three?
I think they started doing it about halfway through the series, and then you had one in each episode.
So I'm thinking there was the one where fake Pietro popped up and said Snoop is going to Snoop, and that was that.
Yes.
And I'm struggling to think of anything apart from the one at the very end where she's in the cabin in the woods with the Darkhold. I'm struggling to think of the other one anymore.
I think, maybe you're right, but I still think it's significant that they haven't done one yet and we're halfway through the series.
But I also think that when it does happen, it'll be even more significant, if that makes to try kind True. Of flip that on its head, that when they start giving you the post-credits that, you know, you go like, oh, okay, we're now, it's there, because obviously they're ending on a cliffhanger anyway.
So, because in
many ways, the post-credit scenes in the movies, the movie finishes as all movies do. They have their very definitive closing scenes, and that's it. But the post-credits in the movies, that is the cliffhanger for the next, essentially, the next episode.
That's actually a very good point.
Except that episode is just another multi-million pound movie that's, you know, a few months down the line and is currently in post-production. Whereas TV, you know, everything that it ends on, apart from the last episode, or in some cases including the last episode, is the cliffhanger. It doesn't need a post-credit scene because the end of the episode is the post-credit scene.
Huh. Good point. Well made. All right.
Thank you.
Well done. Shit. I liked that they ended on another very good thematic song. Again, I looked it up. I'd not heard of it, but it's called Dark Moon by Bonnie Guitar. And initially I was like, but the theme tune. I really like the theme tune. And then they played the theme tune. So
yeah. I've literally, I think 2 minutes after it stopped, I think you sent me the link, and then we were chatting about it. So I haven't had any chance to look into anything as far as it. But I'm definitely gonna. In fact, one of the things I know that Eric Voss normally does is look at the lyrics to these songs. So yeah. I'm gonna have a little look at the lyrics now that I know the name of the songs.
Yeah, the lyrics did feel really thematic. Yeah.
Straight away, there's a line that just jumped out. Mortals have dreams of love's perfect schemes, but they don't realize that love will sometimes bring a dark moon away up high in the sky. Like, talk about mortals and schemes and love. That is, yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's intriguing. I'm definitely gonna. I could lose many hours of my life if I let myself go on this. On this roller coaster ride, I could get lost down so many rabbit holes. I tell you,
it's a roller coaster down a bloody rabbit hole, mate.
but that entire roller coaster is actually in a car of another roller coaster that is also going down.
Exactly that.
It's the inception of roller coasters.
So I did have a little look at some reviews before I did this. And the criticism that I've seen more than once is that it feels like a side quest and very much like a Doctor Who episode.
As in this episode or this series?
This particular episode feels like the two people with a mystery, something to solve, working together, traveling through time, feels like a Doctor Who episode. And that this almost feels like a side quest, like a filler episode. Do you think that those criticisms are fair?
I mean, is that a criticism?
Well, I suppose it's an observation to some.
This is the thing, like, and you know, to kind of potentially turn this back around to wrestling bookings, not every show can be WrestleMania. Some shows you have to have a build. And I think that, I don't know, I think that, obviously the things that happened on this side quest, if you will, we still learned quite a lot, does it? It's not as if we've come away from this episode not having learned anything or traveled anywhere or, you know, been on at least a bit of a journey.
True.
I would argue that some episodes need to be side quests. And in fact, it got to a point where with the Netflix, kind of Marvel series. And in fact, I think potentially in many ways, these new ones as well, there's almost always an episode that is for somebody else. So with Jessica Jones, we had, Patsy had an episode. And in Luke Cage, somebody else had their episode, where actually this entire episode was dedicated to fleshing out this side character, and it was it was their entire backstory. And I'm sure I want to say there's potentially been the same with WandaVision and with Falcon and the Winter Soldier, where it's almost like they take a break from looking at this scene over here and actually give you a callback or something else to a scene, you know, that happened 20 years ago, but sets up and fleshes out, you know, the current story a bit better. So I'm fully expecting one episode in this run to be Sylvie's episode, where it's literally, we don't even see Tom Hiddleston for a whole episode, or maybe for a couple of minutes at the start or a couple of minutes at the end. I'm fully expecting there to be.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to, has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I guess call it a side quest, call it a side episode, whatever it is. But at the same time, it will still give us more information on what is currently going on. You know, the main mission will benefit from it because we'll now know about everything else. Like, we now know how her powers work. We know we know that the TVA workers are not these kind of omnipotent beings that are just made from timey-wimey stuff, and they've actually been potentially kidnapped from their own time streams. I think we've learned a lot in this episode, and I think it does it a disservice to call it a side quest. I can see what people mean, but again, because people are expecting these massive big revelations in every episode, but if you get that, it just means it will lessen the impact of the ones that you get. You need to have the highs, the lows, the peaks, the troughs, the fast episodes, the slow episodes, the builders and the payoffs. You need to have all of that. That's what makes good television.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I do feel like this episode was important for establishing a relationship between Loki and Sylvie, because at some point one of the two is going to stab the other one in the back. They both are going to do it two or three times. But it does feel like they formed a friendship and the truce didn't feel forced because they were in a situation where they had to, really.
Yeah. Yeah. I still think it's, you said it there. We've essentially built the relationship now between them. They've had a lot of dialogue back and forth. They've learned about each other in a few ways. And as I say, they wouldn't have been able to do that if it was this huge space battle going off and, you know, all of these things were happening. They had to have a bit of a slight pause in the action in order to build that rapport with each other.
And I think they clearly have formed some kind of relationship, some kind of friendship that means it will hurt when they stab the other one in the back, which they would inevitably do. Because I don't believe for a second that Loki didn't dislike having to stab Thor in the back, you know?
Yeah. In many ways, I think there's a part of me that wants to believe he was doing it because he felt like he had to, because that's the role that has been given to him. He's been labelled as a trickster who stabs everyone in the back. So therefore, in order to have an identity, he has to do the identity that people have given him. In a way, like Frigga said to Thor in Endgame, you know, everyone fails at being who they should. I'm not even going to continue to paraphrase it because I'll butcher it entirely. But you know, Loki's currently being who he feels he should, and potentially there's someone else deeper down underneath all these layers of doubt and worry and stuff that maybe I don't think we know the real Loki, and maybe we're going to start to see that who that might be because of his relationship with Lady Loki, with Sylvie, whatever you want to call her. I think there's a lot of room even now, you know, despite all the character arc that he's had, you know, in the films up until now. I think there's still plenty of room for him to kind of grow and change and become somebody else.
How did you feel about the lack of Mobius?
It needed it, in all honesty. It needed it because This wasn't his episode. This was the episode for building Loki and Sylvie's relationship a little bit. And I think if he'd have come into that, like he's already had two episodes of building his relationship with Loki, and now it's time for Loki to forge some other relationships elsewhere. I kind of like it in a way. If he had just popped up and saved the day and just dragged him by the earlobe back to the TVA, we wouldn't have had the development that we have.
I think I agree with you, but I still think it's a bold move.
Yeah, oh, absolutely, yeah. But I think bold moves are what makes that defines Marvel storytelling. You know, they take calculated risks. And while I think everyone was starting to really enjoy the relationship between Loki and Mobius, in a way, a little bit like that kind of like the love hate relationship between Falcon and Winter Soldier. I think, and in fact, if anything, he wasn't in the episode, but we were still able to have a very, very big development in his character and his and Loki's relationship in this episode, because we learned that he lied to him about where the TVA people came from.
Or he didn't know, and he's as much of a victim as they are.
There we go. And in a way, there's a part of me that wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't realize that. Because I don't think he... Because obviously, if he's clearly an agent of theirs, he's not in any sort of power or control. So there's every chance that he's been brainwashed as well.
So for me, I, for me at least, I feel like the fact that they are hundreds of years old is more of a revelation than they are variants. I feel like that gives you even more confirmation that these people aren't just people who have got a club and are quite martial artsy. They're clearly much more powerful than that. Much, much more powerful than that. If they can live for 100 years and look like they're 30.
But at the same time, you know, time does move differently in the TVA. So what does 100 years mean for them?
True.
I'm asking so many questions and you're just like, oh, okay. Like, I trust nothing in these episodes, and my perception of reality and time and identity and truth and lies, everything is in question. I am not resting on any laurels right now. I'm waiting for some twists and turns to kind of catch me by surprise.
It does feel like something that on a rewatch you're knowledge will give you a very different kind of enjoyment.
Yes, yeah. And maybe I should go back and rewatch WandaVision knowing that it was Agatha all along, and maybe I should go back and rewatch Falcon and Winter Soldier, you know, knowing what happens. But I guess I kind of like that mix of perceptions of, you know, on first watch, this is how I'm thinking and feeling. And then I'm going to watch it two or three more times and then come in and this is how I'm thinking and feeling. That's why I tend to try and watch all of the major films a couple of times, because the first time I sit down and watch something like Endgame, I am that kid in a candy store just staring up at all the sweet treats in front of me and just soaking it all in. And then after about two or three episodes or two or three rewatches, I'm noticing the things I didn't the first time because I was just too damn excited. But yeah, I think I'm hoping there's going to be more revelation. Well, there's got to be more revelations as the series runs on that will completely warp our understanding of what's happened already. Much like, in fact, one of my biggest takeaway so far from the Loki series, and this might be, I'm not sure if this is an obvious one or one that everyone else would agree with. My biggest takeaway so far, the Infinity Stones, which have been the absolute cornerstone of all cosmic, universal, be-all, end-all power for the past 10 years of cinematic universe building, were reduced to paperweights. And I get the feeling that it's an attempt at trying to troll, but at the same time, I both love it and hate it, because just like that,
yeah,
they turned everything we've been hoping for and fighting for into an office desk ornament. And I love that. I love it, because we would have never predicted that. We would have never predicted it. But at the same time, it almost, that to me was a big sign of saying, okay, well, that's what's happened. That is what's happened. And that's now a paperweight. That's now over there on Steve's desk, keeping his files in order. And I almost love the way they're able to. So now, essentially, maybe it'll be curious to rewatch Infinity War and Endgame, knowing that they're fighting over a bunch of paperweights.
Oh, don't.
Does that then lose the tension? Or would I rewatch Thanos' first snap and be like, oh, it's just a paperweight, isn't it? Or would that impact still be there? That new watching with this new information, this newfound knowledge. I love the way they're able to kind of twist and turn everything, and it's just, yeah, you'd never see it coming, but I love it. I love the surprises, I love the twists, I love the turns.
Brilliant stuff. So I've got one last thing I want to talk about before we go. Is there anything that we've missed that you wanted to talk about?
I could talk about this until the cows come home. So I'm going to say no for the sake of the length of the podcast. I'm going to say no.
So the one thing I wanted to touch on,
yeah,
is we know that Richard E. Grant has been cast, and we are 50% of the series through and no Richard E. Grant.
I didn't know that.
For me, yeah. Well, for me, this just confirms that he is clearly a major character. And a reveal at the end, or very close to the end.
Okay, yeah.
Do we think Richard E. Grant is a timekeeper, or do we think he's a recognisable Marvel character that we don't know is coming back? There's speculation online about it being Kang the Conqueror, which would be very interesting.
So, as I say, because I haven't been digging too much into the breakdowns, the spoilers, we've had this rumor, or here's some leaked set photos, because I've been avoiding all that sort of stuff. I don't think I knew that he was cast. So I guess I don't know. I guess there's no speculation for me as of yet. Because I guess they're not going to cast a really big name just to come in as a bit. He's not going to be playing Carl the desk jockey, is he? He's going to be something, yeah. Although saying that, I think I was aware that Kang has I'm pretty sure Kang's been cast, hasn't he? There was an actor that has been cast in that role, I think.
I'm not sure.
I feel like I have seen something on that, because that pertains to a film, and there's certain things I can't. But anything with Loki on, I've tended to avoid it.
Right.
Kang the Conqueror actor. Jonathan Majors has been reportedly cast as Kang in Ant-Man 3.
Oh. Well, there you go.
So it might not be. But then at the same time, you know, Kang could be, he could be a variant of Kang. Who knows?
That's also true.
He could be the actual. I mean, yeah, this thing, I guess I haven't really thought about this, so I'm not sure. He could be the timekeeper himself, or one of them. He could be all, he could be all three.
He could.
Yeah, it's it's and I guess in the, with this respect, because you know that they're not going to cast a big name actor as a small time character, it's almost intriguing to find out who he could be. And again, sure. if I knew the comic arc, I could potentially know who the tie-ins were, in this Loki story arc, this person, you know, comes up quite a lot. In Wanda's own, you know, comic series, we know that Agatha Harkness comes up quite a lot, so therefore it's got to be her. You know, it's without that prior knowledge, it could be anybody. So I guess for you, as somebody with the knowledge, is there anyone that you think he could be?
Well, I thought it was Kang because I didn't know about the casting.
Oh, okay. So fair play. That's not to say that it's not him. It could be. We don't know.
True. So, Ollie, it's been an absolute pleasure sitting down and talking Marvel with you.
It's been good fun.
Thank you so much for joining us on Podcast 616. I'm hoping to have you back at another point, maybe for another conversation about a different character or show or something like that.
Just throw up the bat signal and I will see it and I will be there.
Give us your plugs. Tell us about projects you're doing and where people can find you on the internet.
Yeah, so my social media is F4R_mastermind is pretty much most of my things, or the Mastermind Ollie Spring Wrestling Commentator on Facebook. I guess the main thing to plug is the fact that I'm commentating for Progress Wrestling, which is huge. They're available on the WWE Network, which I learned has, I think, 1.5 million subscribers. Which blew my mind when I googled that. Also available on Progress On Demand, and if you're in America, on Peacock TV, which I learned has upwards of 50 million subscribers. So
that's bonkers.
I still don't think my head has been wrapped around it, to be honest. There's a lot of millions in there, and it's crazy. It's absolutely nuts. So yeah, by all means, check out everything Progress related. I'm on chapter 112 onwards. At time of recording, 113 went out Saturday, just gone. And the next one is coming out in 2 weeks after that Saturday. I can hand on heart say it's some of the best wrestling I've ever watched. And if that's something you like, then by all means, head on over to those things and watch it. I also have a second Instagram account that I'm kind of slowly building up, which is intheendgame.boardgames. I've become a bit of a board game nerd, and I couldn't help but make a Marvel reference in the handle for that as well.
Brilliant.
So if board gaming is a thing, or even if it's not a thing, but it's something you might be interested in, I can point you in many directions of stuff like that, because especially in lockdown when you couldn't leave the house, it has really saved my sanity. And it turns out there is a lot to board gaming past Monopoly and Cluedo and Scrabble. There are so much, so many fun things out there to explore. That's pretty much the main things for now. I mean, that's all I'm really properly doing right now, for sure.
Brilliant stuff. If you're looking for me, I'm at Mark Adams HC on Twitter and Instagram. I have 3 podcasts on the network: Writing the Childhood, which is about kids' TV and looking at it from 2 different generations' perspectives; Shipwrecked and Comatose, which is the Red Dwarf podcast on our network; and Life's Milestones, which is based around my job as a humanist celebrant. All of those are available wherever you are listening to this, because, well, you're listening to a podcast, so you know how to find podcasts. Or you can have a quick look at wemadethisnetwork.com. I do not even know if I'm on next week. So,
I know.
So
I'm
we've
not.
Got, no, well, we've got our 3 main hosts. You've got me, you've got Luke, you've got Carpenter. You're going to see all 3 of us at some point, maybe more than once, as we continue our coverage of Loki. But we have also got the network head, Tony Black, at one point. Kurt North is a returning host who, if you remember, he covered WandaVision, and also Craig McKenzie, who did both WandaVision and Falcon and the Winter Soldier for us. He's coming back for a chat as well. So there's loads more cool stuff coming with our coverage of Loki on Podcast 616. So once again, Ollie, thank you so much for joining me, mate.
It's been a pleasure, buddy. It's been a pleasure.
And to everybody listening, thank you for joining us for another episode. And remember, We are part of the We Made This podcast network, and Loki isn't everything we'll be discussing, so we'll give you a taste of the other shows on our network, some of the ones I even touched on when I plugged myself. So we'll see you next time on Podcast 616, where we are burdened with the glorious purpose to talk about the MCU.
Elsewhere on We Made This. Real talk, the We Made This Movie Show.
I watched Rabid Grannies on YouTube for free, and it's got hundreds of thousands of watches. And these are things that they've already made their profit from. So these old films, the Troma just stuck them all up and made some extra money off them, and bravo, because they weren't making money from these extortionate eBay sales, but they made money from the free views on YouTube. So I think that's ace. I think bringing those ludicrous films to a new generation, or indeed an old generation who don't want to pay insane amounts, is nothing but a positive thing.
I didn't know about that.
We dig music.
I need to be very careful this month who I slag off. In the 1968 episode, I slagged off Nick Kamen, and he died.
Did you f***ing kill him?
Yes, I killed Nick Kamen.
Did you kill him with your thirst, just imagining him in that advert? Your weird, thirsty thoughts just finally did for him.
You do realise, Tracy, I've just recorded your confession and I will be sending it to the authorities. try not to kill anyone, Tracy.
I'll try. Fuck's sake.
The time is now. A Millennium Podcast.
But my whole world fell apart. And all they could do, the whole universe, was to silently move on. A quote from author and poet Khadija Rupa. There's one thing about trauma that's especially cruel. It's not the physical and psychological scars you'll have to carry with you your entire life. And it's not the friendships or relationships that may end because of the emotional ramifications as a result of it. It's that life goes on.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network.
Ollie, this whole thing about the discussion of love and maybe love is hate and love is an imaginary dagger, it's made me think, what is love?
See, to me, it's kind of obvious. To me, love is like a beacon of hope when everything is falling down around you and crashing at your feet. Love is like an ark to carry you away to safety, to keep you warm, to look after you and save you from everything that's falling apart around you.
But mate, the ark got hit by an asteroid.
Oh yeah, it did. All right then, Mark. What is love?
Oh, baby, don't hurt me.
Don't hurt me?
No more.